This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Monday, November 18th. The impeachment news once again did not take the weekend off. On Friday night, House Democrats were holding another deposition with an increasingly key figure, a guy named David Holmes, an aide to Trump's ambassador in Ukraine, William Taylor. Holmes is the guy who overheard President Trump demanding investigations in a phone call in a restaurant in Ukraine on an unsecured cell phone with Ambassador Gordon Sondland, that guy. This is important in determining the timeline and Trump's personal involvement while the military aid was suspended. On Saturday, the Democrats released the deposition transcripts of National Security Council official Tim Morrison, who corroborates facts about Trump's involvement, and Mike Pence aide, Jennifer Williams. She was in on the July 25th call and a later call between Zelensky and Pence in September. Morrison and Williams will testify publicly together tomorrow. Gordon Sondland's testimony on Wednesday is shaping up to be incredibly central. The Wall Street Journal reported last night that Sondland will testify that he kept several Trump administration officials apprised of his pressure on Zelensky to launch investigations. And of course, it was Sondland on the phone with Trump in that restaurant. Sounds like the end of a game of Clue. Sondland in the restaurant with a cell phone to Trump. My guest is Politico foreign affairs correspondent Nihal Tusi. Hi, Nihal. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. And by the way, I want your listeners to know that if they are having a hard time following all this, I sympathize. I'm a reporter trying to cover it, and I am having a hard time following all of it.
I know. And we're trying to break it down every day here and keep it as understandable as possible. So can we take these one at a time in pursuit of that simplicity and clarity? David Holmes' deposition taken on Friday night. First, remind us a little bit more of why they're still deposing new witnesses.
Well, basically, it's because new information is coming to light, and and the Democrats in particular really are still trying to get out one of the central mysteries, which is, was the military aid to Ukraine frozen in part to pressure the Ukrainians to launch these investigations that the president wanted? That's something that they don't have quite the smoking gun on it just yet. And I don't know that they necessarily need it in the long run, but I think it's something that they are trying to find. And so whenever they hear something like this latest information about David Holmes, they want to try to get what they can to make their case even stronger for impeachment.
So David Holmes was referred to in probably the most newsworthy moment of Ambassador Bill Taylor's public testimony in the hearing last Wednesday when Taylor revealed the restaurant call. I'm going to play that 30-second clip so people know what we're talking about.
In the presence of my staff at a restaurant, Ambassador Sondland called President Trump and told him of his meetings in Kyiv. The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for.
So the member of his staff is David Holmes. I guess this, if nothing else, sets the stage for Sondland's testimony on Wednesday to be even more of a sort of eating popcorn, staring at the screen moment, huh?
Oh my gosh, how did you know that I was going to bring popcorn? Because I got to tell you, like Gordon Sondland's testimony, I think it's going to be absolutely amazing. In particular, because his deposition was, shall we say, vague at certain points, and he's already had to update it at least once. And then there's just all this new information coming, not only from, you know, career department officials like David Holmes and Bill Taylor, but also Tim Morrison, who basically was a political appointee and is known to be a very conservative, right-wing type of figure. And even he has testified and said, well, yeah, Gordon Sondland was regularly in contact with the president. Gordon Sondland, you know, made it clear that he was running this kind of irregular foreign policy channel. Basically, he's getting drawn in tighter and tighter to what was happening. And people are going to want to know a lot from him.
The House Democrats released the transcripts on Saturday of Tim Morrison and Jennifer Williams' depositions. They will both be testifying in public tomorrow. Can you talk about the significance of Jennifer Williams?
Yeah, I mean, Jen Williams, if I'm remembering properly, she was the one who was describing the hold on the military aid and how unusual it was. And basically just, you know, how people were trying to figure out, why is this happening? At the same time, she's an advisor to Vice President Mike Pence. And she talked a little bit about how important the military aid was to the Ukrainian leadership, that when there was a meeting between the vice president and the Ukrainian president, that basically the minute the press left the room, the Ukrainian president, this was in early September, asked about the military aid. And so she kind of adds, you know, sweep and context to the broader issue of why this aid mattered and why the relationship with Ukraine is so important.
Let me throw a few things at you that you may or may not have seen yet that have broken just in recent minutes. There's an AP exclusive that says State Department officials knew the Ukrainian president felt pressured to investigate Joe Biden even before his phone call with President Trump, sources say. Now, I don't know who those sources are, but if they are right, if the AP story is right, that's important to the impeachment question, isn't it? Because of President Trump claiming, how could I have been blackmailing the president of Ukraine if he didn't know that we were withholding the military aid?
That's right. I mean, this whole idea that, you know, this was basically a brief thing or that it just came up, you know, for a couple of weeks, it seems like, no, actually, the more that people are digging, it goes back months. It goes back to well before the July 25th call. You know, Marie Yovanovitch's ouster, you know, it wasn't just an HR issue, as Devin Nunes put it, that it was part of a bigger plan, it seems, to really bring down the pressure on the Ukrainians. Now, whether there is like a smoking gun, like an email from the president saying, I am not going to allow this military aid to go to the Ukrainians until they open these investigations, I don't know that we're ever going to find that. But one of the things that I want to bring up, because in this whole conversation about quid pro quos or quids pro quo, whatever the Latin plural is.
We call it blackmail, extortion, and bribery, but go ahead.
Right. But one of the things that I think is lost is, like, I don't know that there necessarily has to be a quid pro quo at all. I mean, if you have the U.S. president demanding a foreign government investigate a political rival, and he doesn't offer anything in exchange or withhold anything in exchange, I think there are definitely people who would argue that that alone, the quid without the quo, is something that is impeachable. And I feel like this is an argument that has often gotten lost as people are searching for that smoking gun.
And the other one that broke a little while ago is a tweet from the president in which he says he will strongly consider, his words, strongly consider testifying himself in the impeachment inquiry. What do you make of it other than really we shouldn't make anything of it at all?
Well, I mean, you know, the only thing I would say is that the president sometimes in the past raises these possibilities saying, yes, I'll release this information in a couple of weeks, or we'll be doing something about this, or I plan to think about this. And it often doesn't yield anything. That being said, he did offer a written testimony in the Mueller case, and that testimony was very vague. You know, he often said he didn't recall, et cetera. And so it was not necessarily going to move the needle in his favor or harm him necessarily. He, you know, apparently Speaker Pelosi was speaking in terms of a written testimony. And so it sounds like the president is offering that. If he were to be willing to actually sit down in public and in person testify, which he did not do in the Mueller case, that would be a very historic event, and I would be bringing even more popcorn.
That's right. We'd have to bring a three-course meal, I think, in that case. tomorrow's three witnesses were all on the July 25th call. I think that's an interesting fact to state. I haven't heard a lot of people say it, but I think this is sort of, you know, the grouping that they're going to have tomorrow, the Tuesday public hearings. Tim Morrison was on the call. Jennifer Williams, representing Pence, was on the call. And Admiral Vindman, representing the National Security Council, was on the call. Those are the three witnesses tomorrow. So it seems like that's what we're in for tomorrow. Pack more popcorn, because three people who are actually on the July 25th call who can testify to what they heard.
Right. And one thing that is really noteworthy about this is how this is going to affect the Republicans' defense. Last week, one of the defenses that the Republicans kept bringing up was, hey, these witnesses don't have direct knowledge. They're relying on what other people told them. They're relying on other people's comments, so it's hearsay. But tomorrow, you're going to have, and for much of this week, you're going to have people who had direct knowledge. They were on the call. They talked to the president. They had these direct engagements. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how the Republicans adjust their defense of the president in light of that.
Let me play a couple of clips from the weekend. So contrasting. Here is Adam Schiff at a Democratic Party state convention in his state of California.
2 years ago, I stood before you and I urged you to resist, and you did. But we are more than a resistance now. We are a majority. We are a majority in one house, and we will become the majority in the other. And we will send that charlatan in the White House back to the golden throne he came from.
So Congressman Adam Schiff, House Intelligence Committee chairman, who is chairing these public hearings, calling Trump a charlatan, saying before the hearings conclude that he's going to send him back to the golden throne where he came from, also referring to himself as part of not just the opposition, but the resistance. Now let me play a clip of Attorney General William Barr. This came before Adam Schiff comments. This is before the Federalist Society, that conservative legal group, on Friday.
The fact of the matter is that in waging a scorched earth, no holds barred war of resistance against this administration, it is the left that is engaged in the systematic shredding of norms and undermining the rule of law.
So, pretty different takes from the two of them. Nahal, what do you make of these things standing together? We have Schiff declaring himself part of the resistance, and Barr saying this is how far the left has gone. They see themselves as the resistance, which is not what you're supposed to see yourself as in a democracy.
I mean, I think it goes to show how incredibly politically divided the country is. You know, both of those speakers got a lot of applause for their statements. And it just kind of seems as if impeachment is going to be hardening the political lines. Barr's comments were really interesting because, you know, he is the attorney general. He is supposed to act independently, holding people accountable. And so he seems to very much, you know, be on the president's side in this. And what was really striking about what he's saying is, well, Congress has some authority to check the president, but the implication is that the executive has more authority. And I'm not sure that that's really how the framers of the Constitution viewed it. They were supposed to be three co-equal branches. And his comment, I'm really struck by him saying, you know, Congress is throwing too many subpoenas and, you know, all these moves. And I have to wonder, like, what he thought, for instance, during the Obama administration years when, you know, there was so much conflict between the two branches, and, you know, the Benghazi investigation in particular. So I find this, you know, again, I feel like it's like people are looking at the same thing through completely different lenses. And it's people are in their own media bubbles. People hear the applause for what they're saying. And I would say the same thing for the Democrats as well. And it just goes to show that we're not coming from a common base of information. And that's pretty disturbing in terms of, like, the ties that bind this country together going forward.
Let's take a phone call. Jack, you're on the air. Hi, Jack. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, thank you. Let's cut the chase on the perfecto. Can't we get the perfecto, the real text, not the transcript? We're still allowing people to call it a transcript, and it isn't. And I'll bet there's a smoking gun in there. I mean, is there a subpoena out? Is anybody trying to get it? Why doesn't anybody yell about it? Thank you.
Jack, thank you. So he's talking about the difference between the rough transcript or notes or summary of the transcript, as it's called, of the July 25th Trump-Zelensky phone call. Is there any reason to believe that there is an actual verbatim transcript?
No, actually, my understanding is that this is the way usually things go, that it's a call memorandum that's put together, that it's not a transcript, that a recording is not even kept, at least not on the U.S. side. Now, on the Ukrainian side, I'm not entirely sure. They might have a recording. They might have a full transcript. And I don't know, you know, if that comes to light, that would be fascinating. That being said, the witnesses who have testified so far have basically said that the call memorandum was pretty accurate. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman said that there were a few things that were cut out, but even he said that he didn't feel like they took away necessarily from the main gist of the call.
And there's a discrepancy that's now come to light between the transcript that the president released on Friday of his first call with President Zelensky in April, when Zelensky was first elected, and what the White House said at the time happened on that phone call. The transcript or transcript notes that they released on Friday made it just seem like a nicey nice call, nothing much was said, congratulations, you're great, why don't you come to the White House? Oh, that's great, I'd love to come to the White House. But according to what the White House said at the time, Trump, quote, expressed his commitment to work together with President-elect Zelensky and the Ukrainian people to implement reforms that strengthen democracy, increase prosperity, and root out corruption. Well, apparently no such things were said.
Right. And this is partly a function of, or the dysfunction of, the process. my understanding is that the readout of the call that you just read was written before the call actually took place. It was based on what people had briefed the president to say, what they expected him to say. And the thing is, the president doesn't really stick to a script. And apparently, because this call happened like on a weekend, the readout was not updated to actually match what was on the call. And it was sent out to the public anyway. As a reporter, I learned a long time ago, like, not to pay too much attention to the readouts, because it's extremely rare that they really convey even any significant detail about what was said. What I think is more interesting in readouts is how long they are. So if it's a very short readout, it's like, ooh, that call did not go well. And the longer readouts tend to be the better calls. But in this case, it looks like they didn't really update it the way that they should have.
Also, another thing that was interesting to me from the release of the transcript or transcript notes on Friday of this first call, when Zelensky was first elected in April, is that President Trump invited him to the White House without any preconditions. And then suddenly in the summer, these preconditions showed up, which appeared to be related to investigating the Bidens in 2016.
Right. And one of the questions is, what happened in between those times to make the president feel like he should impose any sorts of conditions? A meeting with the president of the United States is a big deal. And so for a country like Ukraine that wants to, and a new leader there, they want to make sure they can still count on the United States. So the idea of getting this Oval Office meeting is a very big deal. And so the president at a certain point perhaps realized, well, you know, I can get something out of this. I mean, that's, you know, an allegation. But also another thing to bear in mind is sometimes the president, this president, can act in a very impromptu manner. So you have to kind of factor that in with Trump.
All right. So start popping the popcorn. Three witnesses tomorrow at the public impeachment hearings, all of whom were on the July 25th call with President Trump and President Zelensky. We'll cover it on tomorrow's podcast. Nahal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. We'll pick this up tomorrow.